Hi, I'm Justin Tinsley. You might know me from my work at Anscape, or as the author of a Biggie Smalls biography, or from my mostly victorious appearances on Around the Horn. So you're going to be hearing different voices hosting ESPN Daily for the near future. And guess what? I'm one of them. I'll be pitching in for the rest of the week, helping this pod do what it's always done. Tell the best sports stories in audio day in and day out. Hope you enjoy. Ryan McGee, there's really only one way to begin this interview. What the hell is Captain Dynamite in his exploding coffin of death?
You know, if you've ever been to a minor league baseball game, then you know that a lot of the nights, no matter what team you're visiting, no matter what ballpark you're in, there's entertainment between the innings. And back in the day, in the 70s, 80s, and then 90s, there was a guy named Captain Dynamite, and he had what he called his exploding coffin of death. This dude looked like a redneck Evel Knievel. And this dude would roll up in a station wagon. I think we paid him $500. He was in his 70s then, and he looked like he was about 300 years old. And he would literally pack himself into what he called the coffin of death, the exploding coffin of death. And it was really just like a foam board, like coffin box. And they would pack that thing with Wile E. Coyote, like red sticks of dynamite with like the fuses sticking out of it and everything. And there was a big countdown. And we're in the dugout and using it like a bunker. And right before, as the countdown was going on, remember there was one of the players started handing out batting helmets. And he said, "You better put these helmets on." He goes, "There's going to be some damn body parts flying in here if this goes the way we think it's going to go." They would do this old school, like you see in the old movies, like a T-shaped detonator. And they pushed that thing down, and right behind the same second base where Craig Biggio and Jackie Robinson played, he blew himself up. And there was a mushroom cloud and everything, and Captain Dynamite laid there. And I thought, well, that's it. He's dead. And his wife ran out there, and I don't know if it was smelling salts or she slapped him or what. Eventually, he stood up. And then the best part was, as the staff members ran out onto the field to clean the field up, I ran past Captain Dynamite, and I go, "Hey, great job." And he just looked at me. And his wife, who had his arms draped over, she says, "He said, great job." And that's when I realized, damn, Captain Dynamite can't hear anything, right? He blows himself up 5 or 6 nights a week.
That may be the greatest first story in an interview that I've had in my career. I don't know what the runner-up will be.
Yeah.
So we had to start with that story, obviously, because this week marks opening day for minor league baseball around the country. And I know you're super, super, super passionate about minor league baseball.
Yeah.
In fact, you just wrote a book called Welcome to the Circus of Baseball, which is essentially a love letter to the minor leagues. So, Ryan, just big picture here. What is it about the minors that really, really tugs at your heartstrings?
First of all, it's what I grew up with. And I grew up in the Carolinas. And you know, you're talking about in the 1980s. We didn't have any big league sports in the Carolinas. You know, the Hornets weren't there yet. In Charlotte. The Panthers weren't in Charlotte yet. The Hurricanes weren't in Raleigh yet. You know, we had the Braves hours down the road. We had an NFL team in Washington hours up the road.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of it. And I grew up in a baseball house. And so in the summertime, my mother and my father and my brother and myself, we would load up the car and we would collect minor league ballparks. And we'd go to Asheville, we'd go to Fayetteville, we'd go to Columbia, South Carolina, we'd go to Winston-Salem and Greensboro, Augusta, Georgia. They all have minor league baseball teams. And all those ballparks, and it's true to this day, it is what we believe that we love about baseball. No one's making any money. It's not very expensive to get in. You're going to see something you've probably never seen before. And it's just fun. It is where baseball truly feels like the national pastime, as opposed to feeling like you're at a business meeting or a labor union dispute, which is the way the majors do feel sometimes. But the minors are everything that we love about sports in America.
You know, I have to agree with that because I grew up in Central Virginia. We didn't have a basketball team. We didn't have a baseball team. I guess you could say the only sports team that we had growing up was the Richmond Braves. Richmond Braves. So I got a chance to see Javi Lopez. I believe it's Andrew Jones.
Yep.
I remember one game we saw Daryl Strawberry because he was with the AAA affiliate of the Yankees. He was working his way back into the league. And I have really, really great memories of the minors.
I grew up in Raleigh, and Richmond wasn't that far up the road. And so my family would look at the map and say, all right, where's a ballpark we've not been to? Well, we can be to Richmond in a couple hours. We never been to the Diamond. And yeah, we went up there too and watched Mark Lemke.
Yeah.
And Jeff Treadway.
Uh-huh. I mean,
oh, yeah, dude. Blauser, all those guys. And guess what? A couple years later, they were the heroes of the Atlanta Braves.
They sure were.
And we could say that we saw him. I saw David Justice hit one that still hasn't landed at the Diamond. And you're close to it, and they're all 19 years old, and it feels accessible. In the major leagues, I love baseball, but sometimes you feel like you're 100 miles away from those guys.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, physically or financially. And in the minors, you feel like you're a part of it. And to me, that's why it's awesome.
So I know opening day was last week. At least if you're a fan of the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Dodgers or any of the other major league clubs. But for teams like the Altoona Curve and the Aberdeen Ironbirds and the Fort Myers Mighty Muscles, opening day, it starts now. So today, Ryan McGee explains what minor league baseball can teach us all about the national pastime, about community, and most importantly, about fun. I'm Justin Tinsley. It's Thursday, April 6th. This is ESPN Daily.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Ryan McGee, I'm not trying to read off your resume, but I got to boast and brag about you for a second, man. You're an award-winning writer. You've covered God knows how many national championships. You've authored multiple books. But what is the Ryan McGee origin story in the sports world? Like, what was your first job in sports?
You know, I grew up on college campuses. My dad was a college administrator, so I had a lot of volunteer jobs. You know, I kept stats for the Furman Paladins radio network, or you know, I helped get the football stadium ready for Division II games at Wingate University. But my first real paying job was right out of college. In the summer of 1994, I was paid the tremendous financial sum of $100 a week to be a front office intern for the Asheville Tourists. I had a chance to be paid $100 a week cash, like a $100 bill on Friday afternoons, throughout the summer, and in return, I did everything. I pulled tarp, I painted the foul lines, I cooked hot dogs, I made snow cones, I was almost killed by a Dairy Queen machine, I was almost killed by a tarp, I did laundry. We ran off hundreds of feral cats that kept, you know, trying to use the ballpark as one giant litter box. It was the greatest summer of my life. I've never made less money, but I never felt poor. which to me is the greatest indicator that it was a pretty good time.
Who are the Asheville Tourists, and what's the history of that team, that ballpark, the community?
Well, the Asheville Tourists, most people might recognize them because it was Crash Davis's last team in Bull Durham.
Crash took off at dawn. Said he heard there might be an opening for a catcher in Asheville in the South Atlantic League.
Mm-hmm. But the Asheville Tourists are the Class A affiliate of the Colorado Rockies in the South Atlantic League, which is one of the oldest of all the minor leagues. The ballpark, McCormick Field, was originally built in 1924. It was christened by Ty Cobb and the Detroit Tigers, who came into town and lost, by the way, to the Asheville Tourists. And the tourists play in this ballpark that is literally carved into the side of a mountain in downtown Asheville. And the tourists have played in that ballpark and on that field for 100 years. Babe Ruth played there. Lou Gehrig played there.
Wow.
Jackie Robinson played there. They were a Dodgers affiliate for years, and the Dodgers would come to town. Roberto Clemente played there. But maybe the greatest player who played for the tourists was Willie Stargell. And Willie Stargell, he hit a home run that literally went out of the ballpark and into the neighborhood at the top of the mountain where the ballpark is. The only other person to hit one up there was Babe Ruth in batting practice. But Craig Biggio played for the Tourists. Todd Helton played for the Tourists. I mean, the list of names goes on and on. And Asheville is this very unique city tucked into the Blue Ridge Mountains, and this ballpark and this team is a very unique facility that is also tucked right into the middle of that town. And so to me, it's like the ultimate minor league experience, and family run forever and still family run now. And you can feel that.
So you mentioned some great former Asheville Tourists like Willie Stargell and Todd Helton and Craig Biggio. But let's be honest here. Most fans don't go to minor league games to see individual players. So what do they come for?
I think it's just to have a good time. You know, even now, when the dollar is certainly is not as valuable as it was when I worked in minor league baseball in 1994, I can still take my family, three people, and we can go to a Hickory Crawdads game or a Kannapolis Cannonballers game or a Columbia Fireflies game, and I could probably get us all three in for less than $20.
Whew.
And I could probably feed us all for less than $20. And I think that's part of it. You can go for cheap. You can have a great time. You can spend a few hours, you know, in the middle of the summer in you know, short sleeves and flip-flops and, you know, feel like you're a part of something. All due respect to the players on the field, and there are certainly those can't-miss prospects. You know, I cover college baseball.
Right.
So there are guys that I'm watching because I covered them in college, and I really believe they have a chance to be big league stars. But what you're really there to see is the other stuff, right? You know, I met Mr. Belding from Saved by the Bell at a minor league game a couple years ago.
Really?
Or, you know, you might see whatever the new version of Captain Dynamite in his exploding coffin of death is. You know, the superstars. There's this whole group of guys in these inflatable mascot costumes that do all these tricks and all in between innings. And it's just, it's okay to have fun. And I think in the end of the day, when you go to a minor league baseball game, it's just nothing but fun.
When I think of fun at minor league baseball games, Ryan, I think of the promotional acts like Captain Dynamite, like you said.
Yeah.
So how do minor league teams go about finding and then booking acts like that?
So people ask me about the title of the book, you know, Welcome to the Circus of Baseball. And that title came directly from what you're talking about. So when I went looking for a job in baseball, I wanted to be a radio play-by-play guy. Clearly that didn't work out, right? But you know, when you have an accent like I do, especially back in the day, they probably were not going to put you on a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went looking for a job at the off-season baseball winter meetings. And the winter meetings are, you know, it's the off-season baseball convention. It's in December. It's in different cities each year. The year I went, it was in Atlanta. And you kind of had three things going on. You had all the executives from all the teams having all their off-season, you know, brainstorming sessions. And then you had all of us who were 22 years old looking for a job, and there's a big job fair. And then there's the convention. There's the exposition of all of the acts and all of the vendors who are trying to sign contracts with all of these minor league teams. And that thing, it was like, if you ever been to Comic-Con or you ever been to Dragon Con in Atlanta, that's what it felt like. You got a guy walking around dressed like Darth Vader, but he can't really dress like Darth Vader because he doesn't want to get sued by Lucasfilm. So he kind of looks like Darth Vader. He's like baseball Darth Vader. And then, you know, next to him was Morgana the Kissing Bandit. This was a woman who, rather extreme woman that would run out on the field and kiss major leaguers during games.
Well, I remember her.
You could hire her as a minor league team.
Really?
To run out on the field and kiss your pitcher during a game. And oh, by the way, she also sold her own brand of peanuts. And so there was a guy dressed like a circus ringleader, and he was just walking around. And what he was pitching was he would come to your game and announce the starting lineup or do whatever, you know, almost like a Michael Buffer. But he was dressed head to toe in like a circus leader's costume. And he just kept yelling, "Welcome to the circus of baseball. Welcome to the circus of baseball." And so wherever you are, dude, thank you for the book title.
So that's the circus of baseball, all those crazy acts. What are some of the ones that you remember from your time at the Taurus?
We had a guy, it was an Elvis impersonator, and he called himself Elvis Himselvis. and he was pretty good. And then you also had the Blues Brothers act.
Mm-hmm.
And it was these three guys, and they used to do Blues Brothers songs and karaoke in the Midwest. And so these dudes were living the dream, man. They were just, they were about my age, and they traveled the country in a car they had built to look like the Bluesmobile, and they never slept in a hotel. Like, we pay them $5,000.
Wow.
And, you know, two would sleep and one would drive, and they would rotate, and they would do five or six games a week. And, I mean, do the math. That's pretty good.
That's,
and they did that for a really, really long time. And then my boss with the Asheville Tourists was a minor league baseball Hall of Famer by any measure, Ron McKee. And Ron was the P.T. Barnum of minor league baseball. Ron came up with Thirsty Thursday. So if you're at any ball game, NBA, you know, the NFL on a Thursday night, whatever, they all have these Thirsty Thursday promotions. My old boss, Ron McKee, like copyrighted that deal.
Thirsty Thursday, $1 drafts and sodas all night.
And so if you're drinking on the cheap at a minor league baseball game at any point this summer on Thursday night, you can thank my old boss, Ron McKee. And I can tell you this, Thirsty Thursday was, there were a lot of college students home for the summer, and they literally, we had a courtyard behind the ballpark. They wouldn't even watch the game. You could get a 16-ounce beer for $1.
Oh.
And you could buy them two at a time. So they just buy two beers, get back in line, drink their beers, and it would just, you know, rinse and repeat all night long. And it was, so now my job at the end of the game was to get the drunk college students into their taxi cabs pre-Uber and send them home.
Hey, it was a bunch of Stone Cold Steve Austin action going on up there with all those beers.
You can imagine everyone got a little aggressive, particularly speed pitch deal where you threw the ball as hard as you could in front of an old radar gun. And a lot of drunk college students tore a lot of rotator cuffs that summer for $1.
So, Ryan, you moved on to bigger things. I won't say better things, but you moved on to bigger things. What did you learn from that summer with the Asheville Tourist that still stays with you to this day?
I was only there one summer, and I had the greatest appreciation for those who dedicated their entire adult lives to, you know, 70-plus home games a year and, you know, pulling the tarp and cooking hot dogs and, you know, getting yelled at by drunk fans and having to wear mascot costumes when the mascot guy doesn't show up. I had the greatest appreciation for them. And it's just, you know, you and I both a lot of times have to deal with the cynical side of professional sports.
Yeah, for sure.
And we have to deal with, you know, controversies and labor disputes and you know, athletes getting into legal trouble. And, you know, when sports becomes politics and politics becomes sports, we have to deal with all these things all the time. In minor league baseball, you get to just sit there and be a sports fan. And if I ever get too hardened or cynical or feel myself becoming the jaded sports writer guy, The quickest way for me to hit the reset button and remind myself of why I wanted to get paid to go to sporting events for a living is the quickest way to do that is to, you know, go see the Hillsboro Hops or go see the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes or, you know, the El Paso Chihuahuas. Just go sit in the stands and check out and just watch sports.
After the break, why the future of minor leagues is at a critical moment.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, McGee, that summer of 94 was almost 30 years ago now. Let's bring it to 2023. What kind of pressure is minor league baseball facing today?
A lot. And there's on a couple of different fronts. You know, no sport... And I say this without any exaggeration. No sport was gut punched by the COVID pandemic in 2020 more than minor league baseball. This is a sport that is 100% reliant on ticket sales, on sponsorship and ticket sales. And they did not play a single game in 2020. And at the end of that season, some major contracts expired. And, you know, without getting into how they got there, Major League Baseball now runs minor league baseball. And the good news is that minor league players were always underpaid. They just in the last week have received a gigantic, for them at least, a gigantic increase in pay. It was laughable. How I was making $100 a week as an intern. They weren't making a whole lot more than that. And that hadn't changed until March of 2023. The bad news is that the same bean counters and labor experts who are now running minor league baseball, they're slashing teams. Dozens of teams were cut, you know, 2 years ago. They never played again after the pandemic. There's a chance that more teams are going to be shut down in the coming years. And the Asheville Tourists, I mean, the team that I worked for, they spent the last year begging the city of Asheville and Buncombe County and even the state of North Carolina for money to save the team. Because Major League Baseball went to all of the teams, but particularly in Class A, and particularly with the older ballparks, with a list of demands. You have to do this to your ballpark, or you're going to lose your team. McCormick Field, when it was rebuilt in 1994, was done for a few million dollars. It would translate to about $7 million now. The list of you have to change this that the Asheville Tourists received from Major League Baseball was more than $20 million. And by the time you add interest to that, it was more than $30 million they have to spend. And they came up with it. And there's a lot of people that are angry about, you know, public money going into this, but they wanted to save their team. Meanwhile, there's a lot of other teams out there with the same fight that are not going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And they're going to lose their team. And so I worry that a guy that works for Major League Baseball who is looking at spreadsheets at the MLB headquarters at Rockefeller Center, I worry that he's never been to a game in Binghamton, New York, or in West Michigan, or in, you know, Lansing, or Amarillo, or, you know, name a minor league city. And they don't understand how much these teams mean to these towns. And I hope that's not the case, but my evidence tells me that it is.
So it feels like that disconnect between big league baseball and minor league baseball could determine the future of minor league baseball.
Yeah, and what it's going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you allow the people that I love that have worked in this sport for so long, the ones I was just referring to, if you allow them to do what they've always done, the personality of minor league baseball will still be there. But if you meddle with what they do and you start, you know, making big, massive, sweeping decisions that everyone has to adhere to, there's no way that doesn't take away from the individuality of each ballpark. And that's the beauty of minor league baseball. I just can't imagine someone believing in their heart that minor league baseball or baseball in general, just the sport, would be better off without the Asheville Tourists or without McCormick Field or without, you know, all these characters that I write about in the book. I just can't even imagine someone who truly loves the game believing that it would be better off without that. I cover NASCAR. I've covered NASCAR for 30 years, and I watched NASCAR get so far away from its roots. And I worry about this with college football, getting so far away from what got you there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to grab another dollar, trying to look cooler to a different audience or whatever. I just worry about the bean counters, you know, just ripping the heart out of minor league baseball. And hopefully that's not the case. And maybe our conversation today, if you're listening, dudes at Rockefeller, let's talk about it.
As we get to the end, Ryan, I want to come back to some of the fun stuff that you're doing. And you've been running a contest on your Twitter account to determine the greatest minor league mascot of all time. How do you go about determining the bracket, and what have the results been so far?
It's been intense. So we started off with 64 teams. And my publisher, when I pitched this idea to him, the original thing was, let's do 16 or let's do 32. I'm all in. I want to do 64. If I could have, I would have done 130 because it would have included all the teams. But it's gone on for weeks, and we've had thousands of votes. And I put it up in divisions. You know, I had the Classics division, you know, Durham Bulls and Toledo Mud Hens and all that. I had the NKOTB division, which is New Kids on the Ball Cap, Critters, History Class, Airborne, Concession Standers, a surprising number of mascots that are named after foods, Weather Channel, and Road Trip. And we got down to the final four, and some of this I saw coming and some of it I didn't, but my buddy Splash the Pelican from the Myrtle Beach Pelicans, and then the Omaha Storm Chasers. They actually have three mascots. They have Casey the Lion, Stormy, and then Tsunami, which is basically this green creature with a big tsunami wave on her head that looks like an old bouffant hairdo. And then with Sprocket, the raccoon from the Rocket City Trash Pandas, which came out of the New Kids division because it's the goofiest. Sarah Spain, who apparently is obsessed with raccoons, has become their biggest champion during this vote. And then Rascal the River Bandit of the Quad Cities River Bandits in Iowa, which oddly enough was named for, he was in the History Class division. The River Bandits were named after the group of bandits, criminals, who killed the mayor that eventually Davenport, Iowa, was named after. So,
wow.
It's a cute mascot, but it was, you know, it's named for murderers. Unfortunately, my buddy Ted E. Tourist, from the Asheville Tourists, which is a bear that looks like a tour. I had to wear that costume one time when I was an intern. Teddy didn't make it to the finals, but it's been intense. It's been fun, but the teams took it very seriously.
Ryan, man, I've learned a lot in this conversation. I've laughed a lot in this conversation. So we're going to leave you here. It's spring. We're heading into the weekend. We've got months and months and months of baseball ahead of us. So before we let you get out of here, make your best pitch on why folks should get out and support their local minor league baseball parks this year.
It's okay to have fun, right? It's okay to go to a sporting event and just sit there and enjoy it for what it is, and to, you know, just immerse yourself in it. And nobody's betting any money, right, on the Flying Squirrels, you know, versus the Durham Bulls. And that's not going down. Everybody's just chilling. And you sit there and you hang out and you have a chance to watch kids trying to make their dreams come true and just enjoy everything that we love about sports. And by the way, speaking of the Flying Squirrels, you're a Richmond dude. I'll meet you down at the Flying Squirrels game this summer. I'll buy you a Thirsty Thursday beer and a hot dog at the Diamond.
Hey, man, I'll bring my son and we'll make it a party.
I'll bring my daughter. All right, let's go. It's what summer's all about. Let's do it.
It's a date. Hey, Ryan McGee, congrats on the book, my guy, and thank you as always. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You can check out Ryan McGee's new book, Welcome to the Circus of Baseball, out now. And watch as he throws out the first pitch tonight as the Asheville Tourists open their season. I'm Justin Tinsley. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.